Welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure, brought to you by the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Now more than ever, governments around the world are recognizing the importance of partnership with the private sector to deliver the transformational investment required to meet global challenges. But how do we deliver the enormous scale of investment needed to close the infrastructure gap in an affordable way, whilst addressing societal challenges such as net zero commitments, climate resilience, and the digital economy? GIIA and its members are at the forefront of this debate, and Talking Global Infrastructure is the podcast that will delve into these subjects and more to bring you valuable insights from the experts in the sector.
Hello, I'm Harvey Chandler, EU Policy Lead at the Global Infrastructure Investor Association, and you're listening to the sixth instalment of our podcast series, Talking Global Infrastructure. In this episode, we're focusing on hydrogen, and I'm delighted to be joined by Stephen Jackson, Chief Technology and Market Officer at Hydrogen Europe, the European Association representing the interests of Europe's hydrogen industry. At Hydrogen Europe, Stephen leads on technology development, access to funding, regional deployment, and private finance activities, hitting all the right notes in terms of the interests of our listeners and GIIA's members, I'm sure. Stephen, great to have you with us.
Hello, Harvey. Thank you very much for your kind invitation. I look forward to discussing hydrogen matters today and seeing how your members can potentially support our sector deploying the hydrogen ecosystem in Europe.
To start us off, Stephen, perhaps for the uninitiated, you can give us a short introduction on hydrogen, particularly renewable or green hydrogen. What is it? How is it produced? Why do we need more of it? And where is it being used?
Yes, of course. So first and foremost, hydrogen is the most abundant chemical element on the planet. And when it comes to hydrogen production, there are many different pathways. It always starts with an input, a process, and an output. And depending on which way you produce hydrogen, you have a different CO2 footprint. Now let's zoom into green hydrogen, renewable hydrogen also called. And that is what we call water electrolysis. So that is basically when you use renewable energy source, whether it be solar, wind, or hydro, for example, and you use that electricity to power an electrolyzer, and the electrolyzer will split water. And out of that process, you will get hydrogen. And then this renewable / green hydrogen can be used for many different end uses. Having said that, the renewable pathway is not the only one. And there are what we call renewable and low carbon pathways as well, which are worth mentioning, whether it be through biogas, through biomethane, biowaste, using CCS or pyrolysis, and also nuclear to hydrogen pathways. And I think what's important to understand is that as we are now jumpstarting our ecosystem, we need all kinds of hydrogen to start this economy. So hydrogen has many, many different applications throughout our energy system. As a start, I mean, hydrogen is and will be used as a feedstock for example, the production of ammonia, methanol, and so forth. Hydrogen is also very useful to act as a buffer for the energy system. You can do seasonal storage, for example. You can do grid balancing, avoid renewable energy sources curtailment. So it's very useful to balance basically the energy system. And then also, this is where hydrogen will play a key role as well, is when it comes to industrial end uses. Hydrogen can be used for the production of steel, of cement, of aluminium, for example. So what we call energy intensive industries. And hydrogen will play a key role in decarbonizing those industries. Hydrogen also plays a role on the mobility side of things, especially heavy-duty mobility. So whether it be trucking, trains, maritime, and aviation as well. And so there, hydrogen will enable to decarbonize those particular sectors as well. Hydrogen can also play a role in the production of electricity as well, or used as a stationary fuel cell for decentralized power and for backup power as well. And then last but not least, hydrogen can also be used in buildings for combined heat and power in order to produce heating within buildings.
Excellent. We can see then that hydrogen is certainly a versatile commodity with a lot of use cases. Someone who's very optimistic on its application is Frans Timmermans, Vice President of the European Commission, who has put hydrogen at the top of the agenda for delivering the European Green Deal. Stephen, I just want to challenge you here, though. Is the hype, for want of a better word, on hydrogen matched by action? And is enough being done to attract investment to help develop this as yet not fully developed market?
Yes, Harvey. Well, let me stop you here straight away. Hydrogen isn't a hype. Hydrogen is a reality. Thanks to the development of technologies over the past 14 years in Europe and the steady support of the European Union. Just let me give you a bit more of the landscape. So basically, I mean, hydrogen is seen as one of the key drivers within the European Green Deal. Fit for 55 package, gas decarbonisation package, and more recently, REPowerEU. Hydrogen is really at the centre of the European decarbonisation effort, but also with REPowerEU linked to the Ukrainian crisis. Now, hydrogen is seen as vital for energy security in Europe. And linked to that REPowerEU plan that was published this year, you know, now we've got uplifted targets when it comes to the production of hydrogen, 10 million tons produced within Europe and 10 million tons coming from exporting countries. So it is safe to say that it is more than a hype and a true reality. Having hydrogen at the centre of the European Green Deal, and Timmermans is a true believer of the benefits of our technologies. Then more concretely now, what's happening at the moment and how can we actually deploy our sector? So our policymakers are working on providing regulatory certainty for hydrogen markets, whether it be on the demand side, on infrastructure, but also increasingly when it comes to trade and the import of those 10 million tons of hydrogen into Europe. Also, policymakers are supporting our ecosystem through quite a number of funding instruments, whether it be so at EU level on the R&D side of things through the Clean Hydrogen Partnership, on infrastructure, the CEF funds, on deployment and innovation, that's the so-called ETS Innovation Fund. And what is important to note is that linked to REPowerEU, the European Union has now designed a dedicated window for electrolyzer and fuel cell manufacturing within the Innovation Fund. This was a very quick turnaround. REPowerEU was published first quarter of the year, and we now have this dedicated window open as from November onwards. So needless to say that EU policymakers are working extremely hard to provide necessary regulatory certainty as well as financial support to our sector in the form of EU funding. This EU level is also complemented by national funding instruments, the so-called IPCEIs, which are basically derogations to state aid, enabling increased funding to go into various member states. Two notable rounds have been notified already, the so-called Hy2Tech and Hy-Use. And the cumulative amount here is we're looking at something close to 10 billion euros. So needless to say that here too, at the national level, We're getting increasing support for our sector as well. In this context, so I mentioned the policy side of things and the funding instruments, but we also need to stimulate demand. And in the recent State of the Union address by Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Commission, an announcement was made to put forward the so-called Hydrogen Bank. And that Hydrogen Bank is a market-making tool basically to cover the green premium for hydrogen. So enabling to bring the cost of renewable hydrogen down and stimulating demand for hydrogen within Europe.
Some really interesting points there, Stephen, that it would be good to dive into further. First, on the EU's Repower EU targets, and we have 10 million tonnes of hydrogen produced domestically as a target, 10 million imported by 2030. These are certainly ambitious targets. So what needs to change here to make them a reality?
Well, these are indeed ambitious targets, and hydrogen plays a crucial role in the achievement of EU policies, whether it be decarbonisation and as well energy security. As you said, yes, they are indeed ambitious, but I think that the private sector, together with policymakers and investors, are working extremely hard to achieve those targets. I mentioned previously the regulatory framework, the funding instruments, but many other things are being done as well in order to reach those targets. So ramping up manufacturing will be extremely important, especially on the fuel cell and electrolyzer side of things. Fast permitting in order to enable projects to kickstart as soon as possible. But we also need to, and this is, I think, where maybe your members can play a key role, we also need to increasingly attract private investors into our sector. And infrastructure will play a key role here, because infrastructure is basically the relay between the production of hydrogen and the use of hydrogen. So your members will be extremely important here. What we can see, I think, closely related to your members is that as our sector is deploying steadily, we are increasingly moving from sort of early stage VC to more and more infrastructure funds coming in. Dedicated hydrogen infrastructure funds are being developed and coming into our sector, as well as banks. So we're moving to more and more so from venture capitalism to debt, actually, which is a good sign for our sector. And this is a trend that we recommend. Let's be very honest about this. Public funding alone will not cut it. We need steady and heavy involvement of the private finance stakeholders in our sector to make this work.
Sorry, we're going to turn now to the infrastructure. Like you say, we need more of it. We need it quicker. And we need private capital to be involved. It's not just the public purse that is going to fund this. So we've seen some differences. You know, a big thing for investors, obviously, is certainty. We've seen some differences about how we power these electrolyzers that are going to be coming online. You know, is it going to be off the grid, or is it going to be dedicated infrastructure? We've had the Commission, the Council say one thing, the Parliament's come back and said another. I'm talking here, of course, about the Renewable Energy Directive. Hydrogen Europe's been very active in this discussion. So can you maybe just spell this out a bit more about what's going on, you know, what we're going to see in the future, and you know, for the investor standpoint, what infrastructure and where?
The Renewable Energy Directive is at the cornerstone of the Green Deal and the Fit for 55 package. With the publication of Repower EU plan, the ambition of this specific piece of legislation was uplifted. Basically, the energy consumption needs to be renewable, and 45% of it needs to be renewable by 2030. As part of that 45%, what this piece of legislation looks into is to determine which share of it has to go to hydrogen consumption, and we're looking at hydrogen consumption in industry and mobility applications. Respectively, we're looking at 75% hydrogen consumption in the industry sector and 5% for the mobility sector. So that's for the general framework of that piece of legislation. What is important to note is that here there are different positions between the Commission, the Parliament and the Council, and trilogues are ongoing as we speak.
Now, attracting private investors is clearly an important issue in scaling this market. You've touched upon that in your answer there. Now, one of the issues that drives investor sentiment is the price of hydrogen. Now, what can the EU and others do here to bring it down, you know, create efficiencies and ultimately stimulate the demand?
So let me start by saying that the hydrogen price per kilogram we're targeting by 2030 is a little under €2 per kilo. There are a number of elements that feed into reaching that specific target of €2 per kilo. So we are massively ramping up manufacturing in Europe in order to bring costs down, heavily investing in research and development in order to increase efficiencies and bring costs down on technologies per unit. And also, I think what's important, and we touched upon it very briefly, is the so-called hydrogen bank. So what we want to do and what the policymakers have announced is that a hydrogen bank will be launched. And basically, what it purports to do is to cover for the green premium. So policymakers and the Innovation Fund in particular will cover for the green premium, hence bringing the price of hydrogen down. So this bank was announced in September, and we're now looking into ways of implementing it. It's a support mechanism on the hydrogen supply side of things using contracts for difference. And this is the way it is going to be set up. Further down the line, we will also be looking into supporting the demand side through potentially carbon contracts for difference as well. So this is the hydrogen bank and how it will basically bring down the cost of hydrogen within Europe. We are also looking into a sort of parallel mechanism in order to import hydrogen into hydrogen. This is the so-called H2 Global, and this will be a similar mechanism to cover for the green premium when it comes to imports of hydrogen into Europe. And then one last point, and this was touched upon previously, is the RED2 piece of legislation. In order to bring down the cost of hydrogen per kilo, well, we need a market for it, and we need a market of a significant size. And this is what the RED2 piece of legislation will achieve. It is through this piece of legislation that we will know exactly what the demand for hydrogen will be on the industry and on the mobility side of things. As I mentioned previously, we're looking at up to 11 million tons of hydrogen use thanks to that piece of legislation. So this is very significant, and we really share the view that together with the measures I mentioned previously, this will drive the cost of hydrogen down very significantly.
Okay, and you know, moving from hydrogen pricing to the competition for that infrastructure capital, we saw recently in the US the passing of the Inflation Reduction Act, which is helping to bring down the cost of producing hydrogen through tax credits. We also saw last year this $9 billion for green hydrogen production through the IIJA, attractive propositions for investors. Now, is the EU in a position here to compete, and what is it doing to draw that capital?
So yes, this was a major piece of news in the hydrogen ecosystem these past few months. But what I would like to really emphasize here is that the US is playing catch up. When you look at the infrastructure, the investments into infrastructure in the US, well, the EU has been doing those kinds of investments for the past sort of 14 years or so, whether it be for infrastructure and technology development. To give you an idea, we're looking at roughly 75 billion euros for technology and infrastructure deployment in Europe between now and 2030. So I think the key message here is that the global race is on. But as we see it for the moment, the EU still has a head start when it comes to technology development. And we're putting in place quite a number of measures I've mentioned previously. So the regulatory framework, also enhancing support for manufacturing, upskilling our workforce, putting sufficient funding for deployment and infrastructure, fast permitting as well. And so if you put everything together, I think the European Union is really marching ahead when it comes to the deployment of the hydrogen ecosystem, but we're not alone. And the US is going in big now, and we expect quite a bit of competition with the US market, but not only the US market, that could be said also from some Asian states like South Korea and Japan, for example. Whilst the announcement and the communication was very big from the US, we do anticipate the fact that they will have to fix a few hurdles when it comes to the regulation side of things in the US. And that is something that we are already handling and hope to fix by end of 2023.
Now, importing green hydrogen is an important factor, but there's been disagreement over the framework and what technology can be used to produce green hydrogen in third states for import into the EU. Now, what's your assessment of this and how will it impact, in your view, you know, demand for infrastructure investments?
There is an ongoing debate at the moment at European Union level between a number of member states. And this follows really the Ukrainian crisis and the publication of REPowerEU. So on one side of the spectrum, we have Germany, who will rely very heavily on the import of hydrogen to meet their energy demand. As it is today, it's mainly LNG, but further down the line, it will be hydrogen. And there, basically, on the German side, they would like to import, rely on imports of hydrogen and renewable hydrogen in particular. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have France, which does not rely as much on imports because the energy mix in France is very different, as they rely predominantly on nuclear power. And then France, when it comes to the production of hydrogen, France favours the view of including what we call low carbon hydrogen, and therefore the production of hydrogen using nuclear power. And France, by doing that, would not have to rely so much on the imports of hydrogen. I think irrespective of this debate between these two countries, which have diverging views, but I would not say opposing views, irrespective of that, the fact of the matter is that Europe will not be able to meet its energy demand with locally produced hydrogen. So therefore, hydrogen will have to come from elsewhere. And the elsewhere being, imports from third-party countries, and with a preference for countries where we can link up Europe with pipelines. The reason being that wherever imports of hydrogen can be pipeline based, that will drive the cost down and therefore stimulate the hydrogen market within Europe. So where could those pipelines be deployed? Well, we're looking essentially at the Mediterranean and a number of countries in the Mediterranean, which have high renewable energy sources and are sufficiently close to Europe and therefore could export hydrogen to Europe via pipelines. We will not be able to do it only via pipelines, and there are some other geographies in the world who will export hydrogen to Europe using hydrogen derivatives or different forms of hydrogen, like, for example, liquefied hydrogen, liquid hydrogen organic carriers, or, for example, ammonia. Ammonia is one of the derivatives that will be used to export hydrogen into Europe. To your last point, I think here too, I mean, we would call upon investors to look into these different routes going into Europe. And we need the support of investors, whether it be for the deployment of pipelines, but also different port terminals, so that we can export hydrogen from port A to port B. And I think there your ecosystem will play a key role, whether it be in Europe, but also outside.
Investors certainly remain engaged in these discussions, and we look forward to seeing how the market develops in the months ahead and the years ahead. But talking of market development, is there anything from the recent COP summit and Hydrogen Week here in the EU that you think is worth noting? And has there been any kind of, you know, real strong developments?
Yes, I would say there is something significant. Is that, well, it was the first COP in Africa, and it couldn't have come at a better time in the context of RePowerEU. And therefore, hydrogen featured very prominently during this COP through dedicated days for hydrogen. And a number of memorandum of understanding were signed during the COP. And that is, you can see the import-export leg of RePowerEU in action now. So the Commission has signed MOUs with Egypt, with Kazakhstan. And both of those cases, we're looking at imports of hydrogen through pipelines, whether it be Egypt or Kazakhstan. And then another MOU was also signed with Namibia. And there as well for the export of hydrogen into Europe. In that particular case, it will be done through shipping, depending on which kind of derivatives or in liquefied form. There were also discussions during COP with South Africa, a major South African Just Energy Transition Fund was launched during COP. And that will enable South Africa to transition into hydrogen, but also provide hydrogen and export it to the European Union, there too via shipping. So I think one of the key takeaways here is that the hydrogen ecosystem is really growing globally, and this was really a key point during the COP. And you can see many countries around the globe piggybacking onto the hydrogen train. And you can see EU diplomacy in action, trying to sign those, well, signing those MOUs, and trying to make sure that hydrogen will actually flow into Europe in order to meet extremely high hydrogen demand in Europe in the foreseeable future by between now and 2030. And now let's come to the Hydrogen Week. So the Hydrogen Week was organized by Hydrogen Europe together with the Commission and our partners from research. And this was the first time we organized a major conference, but as well a trade show in Brussels. It was a major success with over 3,000 participants, 120 exhibitors. We published a number of reports, like the Clean Hydrogen Monitor, which is our flagship report. We can get all the latest data on our ecosystem on a year-by-year basis. Our Hydrogen Europe quarterly magazine as well. So, I mean, we were really quite prolific in terms of producing data and attracting stakeholders here in Europe, in Brussels, for the Hydrogen Week. We also had a number of high-level policymakers who came, like, for example, Frans Timmermans, Commissioner Vallian as well. So this is basically to show you that, well, this event was really a success because our ecosystem is really developing at a fast pace. And we are just mirroring the developments in our sector. And we are going to organize the same Hydrogen Week next year, end of November, between the 20th and the 24th of November. And we really invite your members to come and join us for this Hydrogen Week, because we will put much emphasis on the financial community and how they can support the deployment of our sector.
Certainly some encouraging developments there. Finally, before we close, perhaps you can give us a run through of any major developments to expect in 2023.
Other key developments for next year, for 2023, well, regulatory certainty. So most of the legislative files that are on the agenda at the moment, we've talked about RED, but there are also the Alternative Fuels Infrastructure Regulation, CBAM, and many, many other pieces of legislation. Well, they will be closed most likely next year. So that means we will finally get regulatory certainty and know the size of the market for hydrogen in Europe with certainty. And I think that will be very important for investors and for final investment decisions in Europe.
Thanks, Stephen. It's been great having you with us today on Talking Global Infrastructure to talk through the hydrogen market. Certainly a lot there to take on board as we move into next year.
Thank you, Harvey, for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And needless to say that, I mean, we welcome your members with open arms, and we hope you can, you and your members, make the most of the opportunities our sector has to offer.
To our listeners, thank you for listening, and look out for our next episode coming soon.
Thank you for listening to Talking Global Infrastructure. For more information about GIIA, please visit our website, giia.net, and look out for the next edition of our podcast by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.